Before we get started, I'd like to make a statement. The content in this season is so emotionally charged and expresses viewpoints contrary to what many listeners inherently believe. That can make it frustrating to hear, but scrutiny and unfortunately assumptions are very real parts of any jury trial. All we're doing is making them naked so they can be addressed. The point of deliberations has always been to drive discussion, so I hope anyone listening who feels those moments of frustration can channel them into opportunities to speak out and inform others about what you think. The great thing about fiction is that it allows us to talk about really personal opinions in the safe and invulnerable space of narrative. Thank you for listening. And now please enjoy this ad-free episode. When one person's word is pitted against another's, how do we exact justice? Keith Montgomery stands trial in the sexual battery of Riley Page. With limited physical evidence, a new form of lie detection, and an investigation under investigation, the Montgomery jury must determine if the truth lies with the victim or the defendant. Arguments have concluded and deliberations are in progress. JFK once said, "The great enemy of truth is very often not the lie, deliberate, contrived, and dishonest, but the myth, persistent, persuasive, and unrealistic." Counterintuitive victim behavior is a term to describe behavior from a victim that doesn't match the behavior we assume they demonstrate. When a real or alleged victim acts in a way different than what the jury would expect, it's incumbent upon the defense to identify and call attention to that behavior.
There are things law enforcement are trained to do following a sexual assault, including perform a rape kit. Such kits become useless after evidence is lost, as it surely was 4 days following the incident when Riley reported the crime. There was a counselor available at Riley's school that she could see for any reason. This counselor could have offered Riley guidance, support, resources, but Riley never went to this counselor. Following a traumatic event, Riley would have been entitled to take an excused leave of absence from school, but she continued going to her class. Riley could have called in sick to her hostessing job. She didn't. Riley could have at least called her family to tell them what had happened to her. She didn't do that. Do you know who Riley did call? Keith. She called him twice. No answer. Let me ask you this. If you were just subjected to the worst form of personal violation imaginable, would you respond by phoning your attacker? Would you do it twice? She doesn't call the police. She doesn't tell her friends, but she calls Keith. Do those sound like the actions of a victim, or do they, just maybe, sound like the actions of a jilted lover? Who thought a night of passion meant more than it did? And was hurt to discover the truth?
Please state your name and occupation for the record.
Dean Lionel. I'm a victim's advocate.
A victim's advocate is a professional trained to support the victim of a crime. They find resources for victims, offer emotional support, provide information, and sometimes attend victims to court. Mr. Lionel is here testifying as an expert on victim behavior.
Mr. Lionel, how does one typically behave while they are being raped?
There is no way for me to answer that. Everyone behaves differently, and the circumstances range too greatly case by case to allow for comparison.
I see. In your work as a victim's advocate, would you say there is a public expectation for the way a person should behave during the act of rape?
Yes. Most people expect rape victims to fight back, to resist an attack physically, or to scream for help. However, the majority of victims I've worked with didn't do that. They froze during the attack due to shock and an inability to focus.
What is an acknowledged rape victim?
An acknowledged rape victim is a victim that accepts what happened to them as sexual assault.
And an unacknowledged rape victim?
An unacknowledged rape victim is confused about what happened to them. This is often the result of date rape or other non-stranger rape. Sometimes unacknowledged rape victims know what happened to them was not consensual, but they blame themselves. Possibly for being flirtatious at the onset of events or indulging in alcohol or drugs prior to the assault. Perhaps they didn't consent to the physicality, but they were not vocal in disallowing it. Or perhaps they did vocalize their non-consent, but not vociferously enough. Unacknowledged rape victims oftentimes slip into what we call avoidance strategy.
What is avoidance strategy?
Avoidance strategy is a method adopted by some sexual assault victims. They retreat, withdraw, oftentimes into drugs or alcohol. They refrain from seeking help. Oftentimes they're confused about what happened to them and don't know how to accept it.
Do most victims report the crime immediately after it happens?
I wouldn't say most. Certainly some do. There is a form of rape sometimes referred to as righteous rape, even though I hate that term. Righteous rape is a violent rape. Physical force is exercised, sometimes with a weapon. Threats are involved. Cases of righteous rape occur between strangers. Non-stranger rape is more complicated. It can occur between friends, lovers, sometimes with substances in play. Non-stranger rapes stand a much lower chance of being immediately reported because it takes time for a victim to come to terms with what's happened to them. Sometimes a victim will come forward years later. If the victim is a minor, they may wait until adulthood to report the experience.
Okay, so she called him twice. That's really weird to me. Why would she call him?
There could be many reasons. She could call him to yell at him. She could call him to, you know, say what a piece of shit he is. She could say, how could you do this to me?
Yeah.
It could be any of that. She'd be threatening. You know what I'm going to do to you now?
I mean, if it's just so traumatic, it seems strange that she would then call the guy who just, if you know what I mean? If it's such a...
But one of the key things I got from this guy is that everyone behaves differently. So to me, that means all of it's fair game. Her calling him, her not calling is all normal.
Look at how some victims, you know, he mentioned how some victims, it takes years for them to come forward with the truth. And so if it was only a few days later that she was able to finally talk to someone about it and for someone else to help her see that it was wrong, she might have been just still in shock and caring about this guy and wanting to check on him to say, how are you doing with this whole breakup thing?
Check on him if he just raped her? I don't know. That seems...
She could have just been in total disbelief. I mean, just any response is fair game when you're under that kind of emotional stress with someone you know.
Well, another thing this guy, he talked about unacknowledged rape and acknowledged rape. And clearly, if we're... I feel that Riley... would be an unacknowledged rape in this situation, you know, as far as what's being described, and this seems like an unacknowledged rape.
Until Andrea made her acknowledge it, basically.
Well, she were talking about confusion, right? We're talking about someone who's in this emotional state.
I learned of in college, it's called the trauma bond, and it's when if someone traumatizes you or is a source of your trauma, that sometimes then the victim looks to that person to fix it. And that's like a psychological thing that humans do in order to cope with something that's happened. So what if she's calling because she just wants to get answers? Why did you do that to me? What did you do to me? Why did you think that was okay? Make it better for me.
Well, if there's so much trauma involved, I think it warrants more than one day of mourning, quote unquote. Like, I feel like that I cannot think about being raped and then going to work a day after. Going to get coffee in public.
You can't think about it. But everyone responds differently. Is there an appropriate amount of time for mourning?
No. I think that's such a good point. And you can't think about it. You have to dissociate completely from the event in order to get through your day-to-day life.
Too exhausted.
Do you want to be raped and lose your job? Do you want to be raped and get kicked out of school? How ostracized can you be?
Do you want real life to create the distraction to not think about it?
Yeah. I need some normalcy,
right? You need to move on, and so...
So you need to move on and then call him?
Yeah. Well, we don't know exactly. The calling was quickly after the event, I think. I think the calling happened before she resumed her schedule.
I don't know about you, but if I'm robbed, I immediately want to call my robber.
Well, you probably don't have an intimate relationship or have
been in a
relationship
for 6 months. Well, it depends if the robber is your ex-boyfriend or not.
Yeah.
Okay, so
if your ex-boyfriend robbed you, you'd probably want to call
him. If my dad beat the living shit out of me, the next thing I want to do is call my father. You just got to think about that. Like, why the hell would you call someone?
What if you had two friends and one of your friends beats up another friend?
Yeah.
Would you call either one of those friends?
No, it's because it's not my business.
And you're talking about someone not wanting to call up, you know, their abusive father. It's like people live in abusive relationships. Children mm-hmm. have to live with abusive mm-hmm. parents for years.
Sure.
So
but,
this is different than just regular abuse, though. I mean, if this was a sudden and out of nowhere rape, you know,
well, that's even more never shocking raped her before, because as far it's as we know, because it's completely so. Unexpected mm-hmm. and against everything she would expect of him. She opened
that's
her door
so
to him.
That's why it's so confusing.
Out of sympathy, and then what happens? She's attacked.
I just can't imagine she didn't call him after.
Yeah.
And twice.
If you're attacked, that's the key word. If you feel attacked, then why would you call someone and pursue that?
Well, he didn't walk in and attack her. They had whiskey. He went on and on. Yeah. There was like, it wasn't like door in, bam. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
a series of events that happened that led to
this. Right
when
her guard was down.
Exactly.
Which alcohol is... And this a key ingredient of alcohol. That's what alcohol does.
Right. Yeah. And it, which is the problem. I mean, that's one of the big issues here is that kind of blurs everything, you know, for everybody involved and kind of for us.
He was the one that took the alcohol there. Did he go there with a plan? Was it premeditated? Did he think, it didn't work out
alcohol,
with my ex?
Well,
so maybe,
what do they call alcohol?
I mean, it was a booty call,
right?
Obviously.
Well, yeah,
he had
booty
a plan,
call,
sure.
Except he wasn't called there. He just showed up.
Mm-hmm. He thought maybe it was a sure thing, and so he did it.
Yeah.
And he got angry.
I definitely
when it wasn't.
Think he thought it was probably a sure thing because.
Given her background.
And that's just like. She was
obsessed with him before.
She was calling him. Like, I think in his mind, as a young man. Arrogant young man. He's like, oh man, this girl's just right there for him. Mm-hmm. He was just right there.
And his
there
ego
for
was
him.
Just totally blown. So what does that do to a young guy, an immature man's ego?
It's
to
upset.
Then be denied a second time in a night by the sure thing.
It's possible.
Second time. When was he denied the first time?
His cheating.
Well, was he denied or was he just, he was cheated on and so he was just pissed? I don't know if he tried to have sex with his, we don't know that.
Right? Okay. Yeah, well, his ego was blown either way by that experience.
It feels like a
experience.
Denial.
Right.
Like she was with another man
in a larger sense.
Yeah,
that's
he was
denied.
Rejected
exactly.
Completely.
It doesn't feel good. We can agree on that.
Can we also acknowledge that she was rejected too?
What do you mean?
She was rejected too. He was rejected mm-hmm. by Lila. She was rejected by him. Now there's also motivation for her. So
to
let's
get
just
even
think
with him?
Exactly. Like there's something there to that. I feel like we're scrutinizing his story to a T and we're not looking at her the possibility. And going back to like the social pressures on women, we also have to acknowledge that there's social pressures on men. Like it's a fact. Men are
That's
going
true.
Through a lot of stuff right now. Men, I could say rape, rape, rape all the time. I mean, it's just...
Well, it's just innocent until proven... there's a lot of social pressure right now about it, and I think that men... I mean, but and I we need to believe women in a lot of cases, of course, but mm-hmm. I also think that we still have to believe in innocent until proven guilty.
Yes.
And there's a lot of reasonable doubt here. I mean, there's a lot of with the alcohol, the past history. Also, don't forget the rape kit wasn't applied 4 days after. So, like, when I mean, if Andrea was so on this, why wouldn't she have her go do the like? I mean, she
it's
would know
Andrea.
That this
was out of
responsibility.
She was out of town.
And the one thing she did do is she did take a shower right afterwards. So that could be that's one thing that's could go either way. I think as far because some people have. Shower after sex, and
so
some
she clearly
people
wasn't planning on
are feeling
going
dirty after a rape and need to get that off of them. So I can see either one of those there as well.
But we've already heard a victim's counselor give multiple reasons why she wasn't necessarily planning on going to the police, or why she was conflicted.
Because so many non-stranger rapes are not even reported because of all the blurry lines surrounding it. Mm. She probably didn't want to say anything. If she cares about this guy, she probably doesn't want to get him in trouble.
Yeah.
So
she's got nothing to gain by me, really.
Unless she wanted to get over. Unless she wanted to get even with him.
Mm. Well, yeah, but I mean, she's miring herself in potentially months of legal difficulties. It's going to completely affect her social life at college.
If she's tight with Andrea, then maybe they have some. She knows the same girls who have been the three girls Andrea was talking about, who the friends who've been assaulted. And maybe it's some sort of, I mean, I'm just saying it's a possibility. We should take all those possibilities into account of saying, like, maybe this is kind of a revenge for all of that, too. You know, it's kind of a.
I'm going to need a lot more evidence on her side if we're trying to discover if she's that calculated.
I mean, that's, yeah, I know, woman. But
if that's I'm really just, what
it's
would.
A possibility.
Well, I suppose anything's a possibility.
Yeah.
The only correspondence Keith initiated after the night in question was a single note left on Riley's windshield the following day, April 20th. She discovered it there that evening, when she was leaving her apartment to go to the grocery store. It read, "I'm sorry about last night. Please don't say anything." It was left unsigned, but it was in Keith's handwriting, and it was later identified as his own by the defendant.
All right, so what was everyone's impression of the note?
So romantic.
"I'm sorry. Please don't say anything." No signature. Please don't say anything? I don't necessarily go to the sex act. I think I go to him being a weak young man blubbering about his patheticness.
Yeah, I mean, we've all sent drunk text. Well, I should stop saying we've all. I have sent drunk text messages that I've regretted, or done things drunk. You know, so I feel like this. Clearly, "I'm sorry" does not have. There's no way that. I mean, there's definitely not a for sure thing that means applies to rape. You know, it could be, "I'm sorry, I was an idiot. I'm sorry, I went on blubbering
about another woman."
I'm so confused why that doesn't just directly apply to the big bad thing he did.
Yeah. Because why would he tell her, "Oh, don't say anything about this person that I was already cheating on you with"? I mean, why on earth would she want to say anything about what he told her?
But he wasn't cheating on. He wasn't cheating on Lila. So
he was cheating on. He cheated on Riley with Lila, and then Lila cheated on him.
Right. But
so why would she want to go and tell people about the person that basically left her for a local bar?
What if he was crying and going on and on about how hurt he was, and how devastated he was, and how stupid he was for ever leaving her, and "I'm so sad and stupid. Please don't say anything. Don't tell anyone. I was really drunk last night."
Why leave a note on her car? Why not send her a text unless he didn't want to be identified?
That's good. Interesting. Non-signed.
I'm sorry.
Unsigned note.
Except not very well thought through, of course, because they could just, analyze his handwriting and who else is going to leave that note, But
I don't think he was trying to really hide that it was him. I mean, obviously.
Well, except he...
It would take a little more effort to...
It would. He didn't quite get there.
Maybe he hoped she would just rip it up and throw it away, and that would be the end of it.
And what a pathetic apology. I mean, three lines?
Yeah.
Doesn't that scream to you that there was something happened that wasn't that big of a deal?
Yeah.
Or that he was minimalizing whatever it was. I mean, whatever it was, clearly he felt bad for it. Was it bad enough? In magnitude to the crime that he potentially committed?
He was asking her to cover it up, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or was he even just testing the waters, seeing, where she was, where she was with all of this?
He didn't answer her phone calls, right? And so he's probably not planning on continuing a relationship with her.
No. Yeah.
And so it is kind of a... pathetic way, as you said, to do that and not need to face her and not need to talk to her
clearly,
while she's traumatized. And so, but he wants to try and cover it up.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like he's probably a dick, this guy. So, it sounds like this is his way of saying, "Hey, don't tell him what, sorry about that last night."
Yeah.
I can't defend his actions in that regard. He's basically rejecting her there. He's saying, like, "Hey, I'm going to go back to her, so don't say anything. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go back to Lila, so please don't say," which is kind of just seems like an insensitive thing to do.
Yeah. It's a one-way communication. It doesn't sound like he's expecting or even wanting her to. Right. I mean, that's the sort of thing. I mean, I only get notes in my car when someone sort of hit it or something. They're like, sorry, you know. And then
say what you said just now. Say exactly what you just said.
What are you talking about?
Say the sentence you just said.
If someone just
you only get a note on your car when someone, like, hits your car. Don't you think that screams something? If I just killed someone, I wouldn't be like, sorry, I murdered your mom. Like, you know what I mean? I wouldn't just be like, sorry, please don't tell anybody that I murdered your mom.
Well, my point is that it's an admission of guilt.
Hold on, let me think of that. Have you ever got a letter, a note on your car that was good?
Yeah.
I've gotten notes on my car, and they've never been good.
Yeah.
I've gotten frightening ones, yeah. And I've gotten...
Threatening ones.
Yeah. I've gotten threatening ones.
I got a note on my car that was good one time.
But it's just like, it's such a casual thing. If something that heavy happened, one would leave.
He's trying to make it casual. Mm-hmm. He wants it all. He wants to feel not bad for mm-hmm. what he did, and he also wants to not really commit to anything warranting.
And the sad part is she was probably happy to hear from him.
Yeah.
It is also very controlling, right? I mean, don't say anything. Yeah. You know, don't,
or it's embarrassing.
Or he's just, do people want...
It's suddenly threatening.
He's probably like, oh, crap.
Yeah,
now
this
I
happened.
Slept with my ex. Now
with the girl who texted me 800 times.
I don't want people talking about me.
He's probably like, hey, now I've stirred stuff up with her.
Mm-hmm.
If this gets back to Lila, I'm screwed there. And then I have nobody. I'm sure he's just, embarrassed about the whole thing. Embarrassed about being cheated on and blubbering the whole thing.
I don't think he's concerned about what Lila, who's sleeping with her ex, is going to think about him sleeping with his ex.
But just like how Riley is tried to take him back after he cheated on her, I think guys can be that way too.
Take him back. She opened her door to him because he came to her in need, supposedly. I mean, the story he's saying is that they got back together. Of course, she's offering a very different story. I think she was over him. She hadn't sent him texts or emails in weeks. She was trying to date this barista.
And haven't you ever tried to become friends with your ex, even just in a subtle little way? Of course not, because you want to feel better about the experience that you had that went sour.
Just because you go on a date with someone else doesn't mean you're over someone else.
No, it doesn't, but just because you're not over someone else doesn't mean you're willing or ready to just jump back into bed with them.
Not necessarily. Time heals, and so even with that little few week, time away that she was trying to move on, she probably felt a little bit stronger, not being so desperate towards him. And then,
A little bit.
So maybe she felt confident to let him in. And
her behavior shows that she had evolved to a certain level.
I think that's wishful thinking.
Clearly
it's reasonable to assume that she might have invited him in, might have been okay having sex with him, might have just still desired him. Reasonable. And that's the problem here. We have a reasonable doubt.
Even if there's, a small part of her that maybe, be like, I kind of want him back. You know, maybe a part of her thought, that's not a good idea. But even if a small part of her wanted him back, it doesn't justify or doesn't, you can still force yourself on someone or even rape someone that you're in a relationship with or you're very close to. He was taking advantage of her kindness.
And then apologizing. The next day.
Was it the very next day, right?
Yeah.
The very next day.
Do you guys remember absolutely everything you guys do when you're drunk?
No.
No, we don't. So to sit there and say that he forced himself on her. When I'm drunk or when I've been drunk in the past, there's things where I blow up in my own mind. So who's to say that's even true?
Speaking of alcohol. By the way, who was the one that brought the alcohol? He was.
Who poured the drinks?
She did. Yeah. She poured two glasses
of whiskey.
She poured
the drinks.
Yeah. Probably because she felt pressured by him. He brought this
good
thing.
Good God.
She was listening to him go on and on. I mean, if I was listening to someone tell me all about, the woman that he...
I'd be drinking
on me
heavily.
With. I want to drink too. What justification is that for? Oh, she drank, so
That she felt pressure to pour him a drink is bullshit. That's bullshit.
How do you know?
Because if someone brought a thing of vodka to my house and came and started crying, I wouldn't feel pressure to pour them a drink.
if that person was your ex or someone that you had very strong feelings over, someone that had broken your heart?
Because I'm a human and I can think with my own brain, and just like she could. Like, she understood the situation and she chose to pour the drinks. Yes, he brought it over, but we're also thinking she's the one who poured the drinks.
I don't think she really understood the situation. I think she was in a position of vulnerability, mm-hmm. and she allowed herself to say, okay, I'll let you in. I'll hear your side of the story. Who knows? You know, maybe she thought she was wrong about him. Maybe she did want him back. But regardless, I feel like he totally took advantage of the situation. He went there with an agenda.
Think about how long she was under his spell.
Yeah.
And, you know, so of course she would want to have a drink with him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the drinking doesn't mean much to me either way, because I feel like he could have called up and be like, hey, I got to talk to you. Let's have a quick drink, you know, or it's just something people do, especially as 21-year-olds. It doesn't seem.
But he showed up unannounced.
Is that true? Was he unannounced or did he call her and want?
I thought he showed up and knocked on the door. I mean, and it wasn't just any
old day.
That
was my understanding.
It was the same day that Lila had admitted that she cheated on him with her ex. So it wasn't just any old day.
And she was alone because her roommate was out of town.
Yeah, and he hadn't acknowledged her in 2 months, so...
So it's late at night, he shows up with alcohol.
Yeah.
But it's not weird to drink alcohol.
Thank you.
No.
No, but all the other situations...
Especially their age.
Elements of the situation we've described, those are kind of weird. Or certainly, they're not typical.
Potentially.
Potentially,
I don't
necessarily... But it reasonably could be the other way, too. I mean, it's like, that's the whole point of
and
this.
And the same way things get going when you drink alcohol... If you say no when you're drinking alcohol, or if you're not drinking alcohol, it still should be respected by the other person.
Well, in that regard, how many times do you say no to drinking alcohol and someone talks you into it?
Yeah.
Yep.
Right? Have a shot.
No, I shouldn't. I can't. Mm-hmm. Come on.
That's not a crime. That's just peer pressure.
Yeah.
You know? No, but what follows after could be a crime.
Well, sure.
And can you just blame that on, you know, they had a few too many drinks. He drove his car into me, you know, but just had a few too many drinks. I mean, it doesn't justify actions that follow.
It does not. No.
Yeah, it's true.
It makes it cloudy, however.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You heard the defense mention that Riley placed two calls to Keith following the night in question. Both went unanswered. But following one, Riley left a voicemail. The defense entered it into evidence.
Keith, I need to talk to you. What happened? What was that? Just please call me back, Keith. Please. I need to hear your voice. And I need you to make this feel okay. Call me. Seriously.
Tell me that doesn't sound like the voice of a confused, lovesick woman asking for attention from a boy. Riley loved Keith. That never changed. She pursued him in advance of the night in question. She pursued him on the night in question. And she pursued him following the night in question. Keith didn't answer her calls.
Mr. Lionel, do victims ever reach out to their attackers following an assault?
Yes, that happens. Most often in cases of non-stranger rape. Victims sometimes reach out to their assailants in an attempt to master their situations or regain control over their lives.
The defense then asked Mr. Lionel whether he'd ever known a woman to call up a partner following a consensual sexual act in order to get closure.
Yes.
All right, the voicemail. What'd you guys feel upon hearing it?
Well, she seemed distressed, for sure.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Poor girl.
Yeah, but again, could be distressed about it. I mean, it's like she could have just stubbed her toe or something, you know? But okay, that's dumb. But like she could have, I mean, she's clearly distressed about, it could be the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a number of things.
Confused about the act also, because she wasn't expecting it.
Didn't it sound that way? Like a girl grappling with something much larger than just a clear rejection? Yeah. And like it's something she wanted him to make it okay. Isn't that what she said?
Yeah.
Make this feel okay for me?
What I mean,
that seems so
that?
Telling.
Exactly.
It sounded like a pretty big thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely confusion, a highly emotional state, on the verge of crying, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
But, I guess my problem with it is it seems, I don't, And again, I know I was arguing before, it's like we don't know, and like, people do all sorts of different things in this, but it just doesn't seem like that would be the call I would make after I was raped.
Mm-hmm.
If I was
desperate.
Raped, it sounded like it was, I don't know.
This point, she still might be confused that that's what happened.
Definitely. Yeah.
Which is why she's using those words on the message. Mm-hmm. What just happened?
Mm-hmm. Did she say what just happened?
Yeah.
What was that?
What was that?
Yeah.
Can we hear it again?
Yeah,
definitely.
Keith, I need to talk to you. What happened? What was that? Just please call me back, Keith. Please. I need to hear your voice. And I need you to make this feel okay. Call me. Seriously.
Confusion and trauma and hurt and...
Which could all be something that comes out of a relationship, yes. A spurned lover, mm-hmm. you know?
Call me back. I need to hear your voice.
I mean,
seriously?
If she was obsessed, you know, obsessed with him, as they said, and what did they say, like showing up? Didn't they say something like showing up at his
class, I think.
Class or something? Yeah. Like that's a little psycho to me. It's a little...
He didn't say she was stalking him. They go to the same school, right?
She
stopped by his class to talk to him.
It's just like she's clearly emotionally got some issues.
But that's not really the I mean that
I'm just saying that plays in her. She's a little so if she's emotional on this phone call, she's super emotional, maybe to an extreme version more than a normal person. So
but I don't think you're referring to this relationship. They weren't still in a relationship at this point, and regardless.
Well, no, but clearly they still have a relationship. They still have a history. Yeah. And so this clearly would be a really upsetting if they just slept together and she's been trying to get over him really hard. And then all of a sudden they sleep together. I'm sure she wants explanation. Of like, what is this? So, what are we doing? Are we back together?
Why is it so nebulous, though? Because I feel like if they just been together and then he just, you know, left the note in her car or just, you know, went off and maybe she was wondering, are we going to get back together? I feel like it would be clearer from her voicemail. She would be asking about what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have a future? But she's referring to this event. She says, what was that? I need you to make this feel right. What's that or this? It seems like she's looking to him.
Yeah. She's looking to him for answers. She doesn't have the answers.
For something which has happened.
And right. he ignores her completely, except for an anonymous note on her car, because he can't deal with it either.
Yeah.
He knows he did something wrong.
But
what was that? What is she referring to? What was that? Is it the whole act? Was it the whole night? Was it one something? What was that? It's almost like something very specific.
Even one thing, maybe.
I don't know.
It was 10 weeks in between, so there's time away. If my ex-boyfriend showed up to me 10 weeks after, even if we just had a discussion, I could picture me having that conversation and be like, what was that? What was that? Like,
sure.
Even if they just discussed Lila, and they did have consensual sex, like, what was that? Doesn't mean that is rape.
You said something earlier about the victim needing to get the... This sounds a little bit to something like
the trauma bond. And this is exactly what I could picture a victim doing in that situation when you consider this trauma bond of someone needing to look to the person who hurt them in order to make it feel okay. And that's what she says at the end. She says, I need you to make this feel okay.
He's the one that created it, and he needs to make it okay, and his explanation will do that?
That's what it seems.
You know, although she had the history beforehand of the obsessive behavior with him, she called twice and she let it go. And then she just needed to sit there alone with her pain for those few days until she finally felt okay to talk about it. And, you know, this one phone message is the only action she did to try and sort it out instead of just dealing with it on her own.
Well, I think that's a lot.
All of that could pertain to just normal emotional trauma from sleeping with an old boyfriend.
No, because what I think is interesting about that is that that's such a different reaction to when she was spurned by him the first time.
Mm-hmm. She did not obsessively try and call him this time.
No. Right.
So,
why such a different emotional response if it was the same level?
She's completely confused after weeks and weeks of not sleeping. He's in a whole other relationship. That's why she's so saying,
explain this to me. If she was that emotionally worked up, why wouldn't she just keep doing what she'd done before? Right. You know, hanging outside of, you know, his class or sending
right, for their first breakup, it seemed like she was abandoned. And that triggered her obsessive behavior of wanting him back.
Yeah.
You think that that would be demonstrated the second time if he does it again. He sleeps with, he dangles it in front of her and then pulls it away. But instead, this is a totally different response. Yeah. And it's so interesting what you said about him, about her not actually disrupting her schedule, right?
Yeah.
And we were talking about that. And I just think it's important to remember that this is someone who didn't disrupt any of her schedule after this happened. She held on to that control so intensely.
She did disrupt it a little.
Going to the police is the most disruption you can have in your entire life to then be thrown into a court case like this.
And
this is not someone
to
who's taking
it.
That lightly.
Yeah.
Right,
going to the police makes you... saying okay, giving, you know, someone else permission to make you relive it over
completely.
And over again.
Well,
and she was just trying to put it in her past.
This is someone who didn't even want to
away.
Not go show up to her hostessing job. And is she really going to
I think
take that lightly?
She was grappling between the possibility for normalcy and with that denial. And I suppose doing the right thing, or at least doing what she needed to do in order to heal properly.
I think she had in a relationship with for 6 months with a man. There was 10 weeks in between where she felt pissed. She was ticked that he wasn't responding. And then here he is at her doorstep with alcohol. They end up having consensual sex. He leaves a note saying, basically, I want nothing to do with you. She's pissed. She's wallowing in her own despair. And then a couple days later, her friend's like, what happened? Oh, rape? Are you kidding me?
She doesn't sound pissed in that voice.
She's like, whenever I speak to my kids, I'm like, seriously, that's threatening. It's like, seriously, call me back.
She sounded distressed, and she was looking for answers. She wasn't
saying, desperate.
I want you.
She sounded desperate.
And emotional. Is it possible that she wanted him and wanted him and wanted him, and then once she got what she wanted, it turns out that maybe it was a gross sexual experience. Maybe it wasn't rape, but maybe it was just a kind of gross experience that didn't feel good.
So why would she call him about that?
Well, I think maybe after it happened, she's like, you know what? This is gross. I don't want him anymore. I thought I wanted him, and once I got what I wanted, it's not it. And are we going to get back together? Are we not? You know, there's alcohol. Maybe there was yelling. Maybe there was... There's a lot we don't know.
Sex is very confusing sometimes. I mean, it's like it throws both parties. It's just, what was that? Are we getting back together? Especially when it's just a few, couple, like 2 months later, where it's still within the range of getting back together. You're still within the, you know, area where you could potentially get back together. So and if she was totally obsessed with him, it makes sense. She'd be so emotionally distraught on the phone
pissed.
Call and
but
wanting answers. And it's just, there's enough there. It's reasonable to think that it's not about necessarily a rape.
Can we all agree that her response to the first breakup, and if we'll refer to this second time as a breakup, can we all agree that her emotional response was a very different one?
Can we all agree that there's alcohol involved?
We don't have
and
any
betrayal?
Sort of thing that we don't have anything to listen to about the first breakup.
And if she was obsessed, she's probably equally super emotional.
I mean, in terms
emotional.
Of her behavior, the first time it was a barrage. She was after him.
Let's get back together.
Out, right?
I want you back.
Right.
They
I don't
said
care
there were texts, there were calls.
Yes.
Yeah. It was incessant.
So that was the first time. This time it's a couple of calls, one voicemail. And the content of that voicemail is not overtly, I need
you.
You're
supposed
I
to have the same exact.
Are
you going to have the same reaction twice?
Everybody
no,
reacts differently.
But if
that was your first reaction,
if,
this
if
is the
if you're
second.
Trying to make the case that she's sort of, I don't know, manipulative, or that she's obsessive, or you know,
she clearly is
something like that. Why
she
such
would
a
be doing something?
I'm
she would be doing something else other than.
She was also given an
twice.
Opportunity she didn't have before.
And he also left a note on her car windshield. And, you know, he didn't respond to any of her, you know, previous messages. He didn't respond to this
when
one.
The note left was the next day? Was the very next day? When he left her place, I guess?
Yes.
So, makes sense. She could be calling saying, what is this? What was the note? What is this about? Right? And she'd be calling about
the
note.
I need you to make the note feel okay.
But she's referring to, he just says, I'm sorry.
There's
well,
you know,
I think
tell
she
anyone,
know what
you know.
He was apologizing for if they were there together.
Maybe the voicemail.
Unless there was many things to apologize for.
Maybe the voicemail was first, and the note was in response to the voicemail. and he just didn't want to deal with it because he knew he was guilty.
Or maybe he left a note on a car because he didn't do anything wrong.
Well, that
then why did he say he was sorry?
He was saying, sorry this happened. Sorry I came over and I'm sorry I talked about a woman that I left you for. I'm sorry I said things that maybe I didn't mean to say. Please don't tell anyone. I'm embarrassed. I feel stupid.
I don't think he would be that sorry for those things. It doesn't seem like he really gave a shit.
He doesn't seem very concerned.
Right? Over the 10 weeks, he never contacted her. He didn't apologize for the breakup. He didn't apologize for cheating on her.
Well, do we
so
know
why
that?
Would he
do
all
we know
of a sudden?
He never apologized.
Well, they haven't brought that into evidence. I
mean, you know what I'm concerned about? I'm concerned about the fact that Andrea already knew three women and that if she hadn't come forward, she might be a fourth person that she would have known that didn't report this non-stranger situation, which, yes, of course, is blurry lines. But, well, I mean, that voicemail, it really speaks volumes to me.
And blurry lines is kind of the problem here. Is you can't convict someone with blurry lines.
I'm worried about the kid who might spend time in jail because of something that he had consensual sex with a woman that he used to date.
Yeah,
Jesus.
I mean, right. And that voicemail, I mean, it was definitely emotionally charged. It was, and she was trying to sort through something. And she was on the verge of, can we listen to it even one more time?
Keith, I need to talk to you. What happened? What was that? Just please call me back, Keith. Please. I need to hear your voice. And I need you to make this feel okay. Call me. Seriously.
Yeah, what was that? Doesn't it? What,
call
it,
me.
What
is
you?
Sounds
desperate.
Like God.
Be desperate
just
said, in that
desperate
situation?
About many things.
Right.
I could be desperate for answers about a terrible wrong.
She's desperate for clarity.
Sounds,
desperate to feel whole
she's
again.
She's emotional, but she doesn't sound like really, you know, messed up. She's also him. Not she's, calling him any names. She's not accusing him. She's.
Well, if she's yet to come to terms with what happened and is looking to him for answers, I don't know if
I
she would be name calling.
I hear loneliness. And shame.
Yeah.
She feels alone in this, and he's the only other person that was there.
Mm-hmm.
And she's feeling shame about what happened.
Because it sucks to cave after 2 months of being disciplined and not going back to your ex and not being, you know, to try and, because that takes discipline and stuff. So it sucks when you cave in that situation, you know. Let him come over and sleep with you. I mean,
and then. So if that's how you're feeling, then do you go straight to the person that. You're feeling shame to have caved with?
Well,
if you have obsessive behavior, yes.
Yeah, I mean, she's clearly still into him a little bit, so. I mean.
She's definitely giving him a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
The reasons why she's doing that, that's what's still a little unclear.
But she might still be a little into him.
Yeah.
And it still doesn't make what happened okay if it
and
wasn't
that's the
consensual.
Shame she's feeling is that
and
she has conflicting feelings of love and also of knowing that he's did something terrible to her.
We started this episode with a quote from JFK. That's how we're going to finish it. As much evidence as we've just heard about the challenges victims face in the aftermath of assault, including the unfairness of behavioral expectations, we should remember what JFK once said. The rights of every man are diminished when the rights of one man are threatened. Next time on Deliberations.
I discovered a small tear in her perineum.
Are discrepancies in victims' statements a red flag?
There is no such thing as a perfect victim.
Deliberations is created, written, produced, directed, and edited by me, Chelsea Cox, and it proudly airs as part of the Audio Boom Network. Today's cast, jury, Lindsay Purcell, Lindsay Fishkin, Lindsay Mallard, Ross Denyer, Kevin Bryan, and Drew Phillips. Courtroom, Alyssa Ariel Perez, Laura Meadows, Blake McCormick, and Ashley Fain. Find me on Twitter at DeliberationPod and join the discussion inside our Facebook group, Deliberations Room. On our next jury break, we're talking to a brave woman about her history with sexual assault and insight into why women delay disclosures or choose not to come forward at all. It's going to be a powerful interview, so don't miss it. We'll see you Monday.